Yeah, 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 come and take a look at the snow. Bright white as far as your eyesight goes. Come and take a look at the fields of snow. I'll just get my coat, then we're good to go. Come and take a look at the lake. Let's have a quick skate before it gets late. Come and take a look at the frozen lake. Put your clothes on, mate, don't make that mistake.
Greetings, holiday shoppers. There are now 60 shopping days left until Christmas, and I believe you know what that means. That means it's time for another episode of Christmas Creeps, your one-stop shop for holiday movies and TV shows all year round. My name's Joseph Wade. I'll be your host for this evening. Here with me tonight are my co-hosts, Johnny Five, the human robot.
Greetings.
Greetings, John. How are you?
Oh, yeah, okay.
Okay.
Yeah, put me on the spot with that question, man. Dang.
Yeah, I mean, hey, you knew what we were doing tonight. Mr. Bradford is here as well. Brad.
Hello, Governor.
Oh, my God. It's going to be that kind of night, isn't it?
You tell me, you're the one who pre-games.
The movie started it.
Yeah, this is true. But also tonight, we have a returning guest. Returning guest, say hi. Say hi to everybody.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, Dr. Nick.
Sorry, I clipped there, but also...
Do it, my friend.
Got to grip it and rip it.
Yeah. Can check.
Yeah. I'm the guest, so I guess I might start. I'm drinking just a Canada Dry gingered ale.
Cannot go wrong with that.
An old standby. It's perfect.
Yeah.
Bradford, what are you working with tonight?
I have a Trogues Perpetual IPA. Perennial favorite.
Sounds good. J-Man, what you got?
All right, I want to get your reaction to this visually, a visceral visual reaction. I'm going to send you all in the chat a picture of what I'm drinking, and I want you to tell me what you think.
Oh, okay. God.
You have this in the chamber ready to send.
Yes.
Four Loka, 14% ABV, my guy. Sour, I guess? Sour grape? Sour grape?
Yeah, Sour Grape Four Loko. If you go by the order of the words, like biggest to smallest, it's called Sour Four Grape Loko.
Riddle me this, Batman. Four Loko still does not contain caffeine after the moral panic that happened about 10 years ago, right?
No, it does not.
It does contain a very large amount of alcohol, however, as we can see on the can. Does it still taste like absolute dog shit?
Yeah.
It's pretty much. Okay.
I mean, it tastes like kind of flat grape soda. The sour is definitely there, though. But otherwise, it's flat grape soda.
Oh, no, no.
I'm going to fucking drink it. Don't worry.
Oh, God.
I mean, it'll get you there.
I guess there's nothing really stopping you from like turning it into like an Irish car bomb and dunking a 5-hour energy in it.
Oh, no,
but why 5-hour energy? Then have 25 hours of energy.
I guess he can do that legally. There's no one stopping him because he's doing it of his own free will.
This is true.
Yeah, my body is a temple, and I want to throw as much garbage in that temple as possible.
Christ's glory.
You're off to a wonderful start.
Last but not least, y'all. I don't have a can, but I got a bottle.
That's cheating.
Yeah, I know it's cheating. It's whatever. Foothills Brewing's Good Ship Wit, ale brewed with lime, ginger, orange, turmeric, and coriander.
Ooh. Turmeric is an interesting choice.
Mm-hmm.
That's a nice local blue moon, if I do say so myself. So, gents, on this final episode of this season's Home for the Horror Days, we have quite a lot of horror to get through tonight. And I think first things first, we really just need to... We need to submit our bodies to grievous corporeal punishment, and I found just the thing tonight. Brox has introduced this season a turkey dinner candy corn package.
Ooh.
And I've procured two of these bags for us to enjoy on the pod together.
You told me about this beforehand, but just hearing you say it just there made my stomach do a flip. Like, no one can ever prepare for this.
So what I ordered... two bags, shipped one off to Bradford. J5 and I split the other bag right down the middle. Actually, I kind of I gave John way more candy than I had, so I have a little bit to work with here. Sorry, not sorry. But so the flavors in this bag, we have roasted turkey, stuffing, cranberry sauce, and green beans.
Ugh.
And then, because I guess they decided that's not turkey dinner enough, they also added apple pie and coffee.
Oh.
So we got six delicious flavors here, and we're all going to experience this nightmare together. Gentle friends, are you ready to take this trip with me?
No. It should be noted this is a product of Mexico, and it is also courtesy of the Ferrara Candy Company. So, right. I have a couple of really disgusting-looking kernels on my table already. Oh, it smells so bad. Oh,
it all
no.
smells like coffee, first off. The coffee is the only thing you can smell. I've identified five unique pieces. Where's the sixth?
It smells I don't know.
Sickly. It's like the sweetest coffee. It smells so bad.
Did you keep all the apple pie for yourself when you split these? Is that what's going on?
No. I've identified five of these flavors, so I'm just going to grip it and rip it. Here goes cranberry sauce.
Is that the pink one? All right, here we go.
Yeah.
I think there are two different ones that are orange and white. One is a slightly lighter shade of both colors. That's what I'm going to go off of.
This cranberry one, it tastes like red NyQuil.
It's not bad. It's not as bad as I expected. It tastes like nothing. It tastes like
a distinct fruit flavor.
It tastes like somebody left a piece of frosting that fell off of a cake out.
Yeah, it tastes like cake frosting.
Yeah, and it just dried up, and now
I'm sure they all taste like that, really.
Oh, no, the other ones are grosser. I already had some.
Okay. Yeah, John cheated, so.
So what are we going to do next?
I didn't cheat. I got bored.
That's still cheating, my friend. Okay, we've got the green ones now. Green beans. Let's do it. Nick, I'm so sorry you had to experience this firsthand.
Oh, no, I'm so excited. I get to not eat it, and I get to hear the reactions.
I'm not really getting much of anything, guys. It just tastes like cake
frosting.
This
doesn't taste like green beans to me.
No. It
tastes like candy corn. I'm going to have some more Four Loko to wash the taste out of my mouth.
I don't know. This tastes more like the apple pie, if I'm being honest.
All right. I have
It's green apple pie. That's what's going on.
Ah, there
it's
you
all,
go.
All the Granny Smiths.
I have four very menacing-looking candy corns left. Should we do coffee next?
Let's do coffee. It's identifiable. Okay, friends. That is definitely coffee, and I hate it.
That's coffee.
Does it taste like coffee, actually?
Yeah.
It tastes like coffee that somebody, like, spilled on the floor and you're licking it up.
Oh, man.
This is disgusting.
It tastes like work coffee.
I've actually done that, and I did that in high school for, like, $3, so...
Why?
I got $3.
Well, that's...
All right.
Get it how you live, but all right.
Should we do the yellow bottom next?
So what flavors do we have left that we haven't identified?
We've definitely got the savories. We've got apple pie, roast turkey, and stuffing.
Oh, no. That one has to be... That's a spit out one. Everything up to now I've been able to handle, but I cannot handle whatever the hell that is supposed to be.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. No,
it tastes buttery.
So bad, whatever. I think that's supposed to be stuffing because you get a hint of onion. I think. That's really gross.
I'm throwing the rest of that, Joe. By the way.
Oh no, that's fine. That is like. It's like sugar trying to masquerade as salt, and it's not working.
It's so bad.
Mm. No.
Can I just stick to the Four Loko?
Do it. All right, and now here's the white and brown.
I hate this so much.
I don't even know if these are the same flavor, but here we go.
I'm not going to eat these last two. They tasted like that yellow one. They all tasted kind of like that weird, buttery, savory flavor.
That one's not as bad. I think this one's supposed to be the apple. This is the apple pie.
Well, then why do the green beans taste like the apple pie? Because, yeah, I'm getting that too.
The green beans taste like nothing. This clearly is apple.
Yeah, I get that. I get this one as apple pie. Well, I don't know where the last one is, but I'm kind of hoping I don't find it.
The last one is either turkey or stuffing, and I think it's turkey, because the one with the yellow bottom is evil tasting, and that's got to be stuffing. So,
well, I just found like a pure brown one, and I think that's,
coffee. Anyways, I've got one with a white bottom, orange top.
Guys. So I think what we're coming around on is this is the worst. Listen, gentle friends, I'm tapping out. I'm done. I cannot do this anymore.
All right. I'm going to report you to the USPS for, like, mail crime. Because this was just... I can't believe you've done this to me.
I'm so happy I was here for this.
I'm glad you get to experience this. But listen, friends, Halloween candy, great. Thanksgiving candy, no. Mr. Brock, if you're out there listening, we do not want this anymore.
I mean, he already got you. You bought it.
You were too busy asking yourself if you could, and not busy enough asking yourself if you should.
Why did I climb Mount Everest? Because it was there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that nightmare is behind us, and dear listeners, if that disgusted you, rest assured it disgusted us even worse.
So now I know whenever Joe says, hey, can you come over? I have something for you. I should bring a weapon.
Maybe. The heart of the matter of this episode tonight, we are discussing The Conjuring 2 from 2016, a film that I was assured would be a Christmas movie, and I think it delivered on that promise.
It is definitely more Christmassy than, like, at least one third of your filmography.
Yes. It definitely tries.
Yeah.
An attempt was made.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I didn't know this movie was like a stealth Batman sequel too.
Listen, just because the Joker is in it does not mean it's a Batman movie. Okay. So let's get it on the table. First impressions, Conjuring 2. Let's start with our guest, Dr. Nick. Thoughts?
I'm torn on it because, okay, so in preparation for this, I watched The Conjuring 1 as well, and I think that The Conjuring 2 did some things better than The Conjuring 1. Like, The Conjuring 1 is, like, just, like, a fun haunted house horror movie thrill ride. It's a theme park ride, like Scorsese would say. Lots of spookums, lots of scares. Not a whole lot of, like, substance, but, like, James Wan just, like, throws everything at you. And The Conjuring 2 is kind of more of the same, but he spent a little bit more time, like, building the characters, and I think as a whole, like, the narrative is a lot more cohesive than the first movie. And I will say I liked the characters of Ed and Lorraine Warren a lot more than in the first movie, but therein lies the issue, because Ed and Lorraine Warren are not good people in real life.
Yeah, that's definitely the problem, and... Like you, I watched the first Conjuring, and I like it for what it is. It's just a basic kind of spook house, you know, fun thrill ride. But then when you get to the second one, it's very much based on true events, to the point where, like, they're name dropping, you know, Amityville Horror. But then you're getting wrapped up in all of this, like, true life stuff, and the movie really kind of goes over the top in saying, you know what, we based it on in a true story, but we're just gonna go full on cartoon ridiculous with it.
Oh, there is yeah, I don't know if anyone did any research on like the actual incident or Warren's involvement. Okay, I was gonna say I didn't, because my girlfriend did the research and told me about it.
Yeah, I mean, this. Not that it needs to be said that this movie's total horseshit, but it is, because the Warrens' involvement in this was non-existent.
Like, they literally showed up and were told to leave.
Right, and so in that much, like, yeah, the based on a true story part thing is true, but that's pretty much where it ends. Everything else is made up out of whole cloth.
Well, the Enfield haunting.
Well, right. Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like how Texas Chainsaw Massacre is based on Ed Gein. That's the true story it's based on.
Wait, maybe Texas Chainsaw Massacre does open with based on a true story. I don't remember.
I think the very first original one did.
I think it does. Yeah, it does. But
It's like, you know, Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Psycho are both kind of loosely based on Ed Gein, but they're both wildly different stories.
Oh yeah, they are inspired by Ed Gein. Same with yes. Silence of the Lambs, but they didn't claim that this was the actual real events of Ed Gein.
Right. Knowing that, like, Ed and Lorraine Warren are real people and are also, like, real kind of hucksters, the fact that this kind of paints them out as being, like almost superheroes really doesn't sit well with me.
Also, the fact that they're portrayed, and like I said, I really liked the characters, like, as a couple, but in real life, Ed Warren and Lorraine, like, Ed Warren had another woman in his life. Sorry, correction, wasn't a woman. He started a relationship with her when she was 15, and Lorraine knew about it.
Ooh.
Yeah, again, not good people.
Which is wild when, like, one of the backbones of this movie is how much these two characters love each other.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Again, like, it's as characters in a movie, it's a well-done romance, but it's running cover for two awful people.
If you change the name of every character in this to something else, it would have been a lot better. Like, my entire viewing of it was just tainted by the fact of how much I hate those fucking simultaneous frauds and chumps, the Warrens.
Yes. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
If it was a case like Fargo or Serial Mom, where the "this is a true story" was 100% played up as a joke or a fantasy, then I would give this movie a lot more credit. But the fact that it is based on a real story and it's trying to tell you a real story about, like, evil demon nuns and whatever the hell else, and again, running cover and laundering the image of a pedophile and a couple hucksters is a
Brad, you've been quiet. What's your first impression here?
I agree with everything that's been said. I really wish I could have done a deeper dive into the Enfield hauntings.
I got
and that.
More pissed off at the Amityville shit, to be honest.
Oh my god, yeah.
Sorry, just like the little snippet of the first movie that we get, or
that's not for the first movie. The first movie was some Salem witch trial bullshit. That was just the Warrens at Amityville.
Oh, yeah. I thought the whole first movie was about Amityville.
No, the first movie does something kind of similar where it's kind of like that Indiana Jones, or I think Joe already made this point in other places, like a detective story where it's just like the first like part of The Conjuring 1 is completely mostly disconnected from the rest of the movie because it's about Annabelle, the evil doll that like a couple nursing students claim was being spooky and moving by itself. And
How do I make a jerk-off motion over, like, audio?
Yeah, the thing is, there's apparently no evidence there was no evidence even presented that this haunted Raggedy Ann doll was haunted until the Warrens took it, put it in their, like, private collection museum and said, oh yeah, this thing's haunted.
Yeah, it's really fucking crazy and weird how, like, the Warrens show up and then suddenly something's a demonic possession.
Yeah.
Yeah, but also I wanted to stop for a moment and say, hey, Nick reads my letterbox.
Yes, I do. I do.
I said that last night. But yeah, like the thing, and I'll repeat it here. The thing that I thought was kind of fun about this was that they basically took the movie and structured it like a detective story, where the first case is seemingly unrelated, and then you get the main case, which is on its own little thing, and then they somehow just jam the two together and go, oh, guess what? The cases are related. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, the first movie, like, kind of had that because Annabelle was, like, a presence throughout the first movie, but she didn't really actually tie in to the end. She was just, like, a threat at some points during the movie. But also, keep in mind, Annabelle started as a Raggedy Ann doll, and they have made like 3 1/3 movies about her.
Yep.
And judging by the doll in the case, she's now like some like actual, not Brad, but Bradford Exchange thing.
Hey.
Oh, also speaking of which, since I was not here last week, the term for how 1 in 12 movies just happens to take place at Christmas is called the Bradford Exchange rate.
You know what? I'll take it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah,
I'm still just recovering from the very bad candy. That's why I've been so quiet.
He's been quietly suffering in the corner.
I'm trying not to just scream the ghost was the Joker the entire time.
It's very bad.
The ghost was the fucking Joker.
I thought the ghost was Marilyn Manson, which that would be fitting with Ed Warren, his whole deal, because Marilyn Manson is also a huge POS.
Yeah, as it turns out.
Karen said Marilyn Manson about the nun as well.
Okay, so what's going on with the Amityville thing in the beginning? Let's begin there. Because the nun kind of figures into it, but it's not tangentially.
Right?
Yes.
She's just kind of hanging out.
Yeah, like Ed and Lorraine are kind of investigating this, you know, the Amityville case. And then as Lorraine is doing her thing where she can kind of communicate with and see ghosts, the nun just shows up and suddenly starts to stalk and haunt her, and will proceed to stalk and haunt her through the rest of the film, to the point where, like, later we see Ed painting a portrait of the nun just out of the complete blue, And her, neither one of their first thought is, let's get rid of this creepy painting.
No, let's hang it in the study.
Excuse you, he didn't come out of the blue. He just dreamed it and decided to paint it.
How is that not the same thing?
Because he dreamed it.
Okay, fair enough.
Because it's not bullshit he made up, it's bullshit he made up when he was asleep.
Yes.
That makes it real.
Everything about this Amityville thing pissed me the fuck off because it is absolutely just... I mean, not that the rest of the movie isn't, but it is the most pure bullshit of all the pure bullshit.
Is it the fact that, like, oh yeah, a guy killed his family and therefore the house is haunted, or...
No, it's the fact that the guy killed his family and therefore demonic possession. When the dude never fucking said demonic possession. The dude, Ronald DeFeo Jr., he said that he killed his family because they were plotting against him.
Oh, okay.
Dude wasn't fucking, like, possessed. Dude was, like, antisocial personality disorder, like, big into, like, hallucinogenic drugs. And then later he claimed that his sister really killed the family and he killed his sister. You know, his story has never fucking been demonic possession.
And also his story has changed multiple times. Like, I think it seems like every, like, 5 or 10 years he comes up with a new reason for why he did it or how he actually didn't do it. And it was Dawn, his sister, that did it.
Yeah, and because his family has ties to, like, the Genovese crime family that every once in a while he brings up Mafia Hitman, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But none of those times were ever a fucking demon nun.
Yeah, but it was only...
It's just, the Warrens show up and then suddenly it's demons. What a surprise.
And yeah, Amityville, if I remember correctly, the book, The Amityville Horror, was literally, like, Frank Lutz and Jay Anson, the author of the book, like, literally said they came up with it over a couple bottles of wine.
Wow, what a surprise. I mean, this is the thing we're going to come back to over time and again, is that, like, yeah, all of this, every last bit of it is patently bullshit.
Yeah,
and it's I want to stress out that, like, the Warrens are simultaneously frauds and hucksters and also giant fucking gullible chumps. Because it's a lot like whenever you hear, like, a case of, like, child abuse where it's like the fucking investigators are like, you know, so yeah, they touched you, right? Yeah, you want to tell us that they touched you, right? Like, it's just all nothing but leading questions against 6-year-olds, which they don't fucking know any better.
Well, I think that's, you know, that's part of the tools of the trade of psychics and other charlatans and hucksters, is these sort of leading questions and leading people to believe your sort of whatever your view that you want them to have is.
Oh, and also when they were on the TV show, the skeptic Stephen Kaplan, I think was his name, right?
Yeah.
You know who he is, right?
Remind me.
No, he's a big fucking quack just about vampires instead of demons.
So he's just mad someone else trying to get in on his grift.
Like, yeah, he's like, they were trying to present him as, like, some, like, fuddy-duddy stuffy, like, oh, ghost storm real. Like, no, he was just mad at the Warrens because he thought the Warrens were full of shit, and he knew the real shit.
Johnny Five, question for you. Did you see the Conjuring 1?
No.
Oh, you would have loved the ending of it, because, like, one of the last things is, like, a text screen that says, there are forces in this world, the God and the devil, you either believe in them or you are wrong. Ed Warren.
Hey, someone please send this next part to James Wan. James Wan, fuck off. Just make a goddamn ghost movie and be done with it. Quit fucking sucking the Warren's dick.
Yeah.
He finally did stop doing that, and he made Malignant, so I don't really know how to feel about him now.
Just make more fucking Fast and Furious then, dude. Come on.
No, he needs to make more Malignants. He needs to go full-blown wife guy and just listen to his wife for more movie ideas and make more Malignants.
No, I mean, Malignant meets the Warrens. That's what really needs to happen here.
Oh, my. Oh, ooh. I would love to see Malignant just go beast mode on the Warrens.
Because, honestly, like, what are they going to do? They're all about ghosts. That thing's not a ghost.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. So, yeah, we get to the main, sort of the main case, the infield poltergeist case. And, like, the film cuts to... London in the late 70s.
The film cuts to, hello, Governor, pip, pip, cheerio!
Wait, no, I guys, I have something prepared for this.
Okay.
Not only am I a nerd for horror movies, I also love punk rock. This movie takes place in, I think, 1978? London...
77, 78, yeah.
77, 78. London Calling by the Clash came out in 1979. Therefore, that needle drop is completely anachronistic.
Ooh. Nice. Good call.
Thank you.
And then we meet the Hodgson family, who is a single mom and her 4 kids, and they live in, you know, this little house outside of London. And Yeah, the house is haunted, and the first
Joel's been missing ever since his didn't come back from his job.
He's off playing with puppets or something. I don't know.
Oh no, the dad never returned because he had twins with the woman round the block.
That's right.
That's right.
Yes,
that's right.
So I'm just imagining the dad is literally a block away, just like, no, I'm with my new family now.
It's like, what the hell's going on in their house? Not helping.
I'm over here with my new normal family.
My new not haunted family.
My new family has less than 4 kids, so I'm safe from hauntings.
Yeah. My kids don't play around with spirit boards they made out of fucking magazine pages.
My kids don't...
serial killer.
My kids don't play with ye oldie timey toys like a Jack in the Box or a Nickelodeon or a haunted hoop and stick.
My 4 children are not literally James Wan. But no, like, this spirit board, this makeshift Ouija board, it looks like it was made by a serial killer. John, are you okay?
You're right there, John.
Haunted hoop and stick.
Haunted hoop and stick, yeah.
I was imagining, like, oh, it's the devil's mimeograph.
Oh, boy.
It's like, oh, you know about that cotton gin? That cotton gin can summon Baphomet.
Anyway, the homemade Ouija board is something a serial killer would make because it's made out of a cereal box.
Oh.
Okay, Edgar Wright, get out of here.
I'm sorry.
Didn't the girl at the... It's not even the daughter that made it. It was like her friend, right?
Yeah, like the daughter's friend from school made it, and then the other daughter took it home.
The cool one that smoked that Ed would probably would be a little bit interested in.
Well, like, a ghost would never haunt a cool kid who smokes, because that kid will just, like, pants the ghost and make fun of it.
Yeah,
exactly.
But, yeah, so the house is haunted by what turns out to be, it's an old man named Bill Wilkins, who constantly tries to get them out of the house.
Mm-hmm. They're in the sunshine when she's gone.
Yeah, by possessing the 11-year-old, I think she's the 11-year-old daughter, Janet, and speaking through her, or is he, because, you know, he's a spooky ghost, so they have to test it.
They record her talking, but she's speaking with, you know, a ghost accent. And they send that tape to the Warrens, and the Warrens are convinced that that's a demon. Yeah. So of course they come to investigate.
You're missing the part where Lorraine has some misgivings because of her spooky Amityville experience. She has recurring dreams of the nun showing her Ed eventually dying on some sort of like sharp object, and she and Ed are talking, and she says, "Ed, promise me no more cases. I can't do any more because you're going to die." And then Ed says something like, "Well, God's showing you me dying, so you know how to stop me from dying."
Perfect logic. One last job.
Ed is literally just like, "Well, let's just go look."
Yeah.
We get this scene where a priest shows up, and he's like their handler, and he's like, plays them the tape, and it looks like do Anglican priests dress in this sort of collar? Does anybody know? I don't think they do.
I don't think he's Anglican. I think I'm pretty sure it's the same priest as the first movie, because in the first Conjuring, they want to get an exorcism done on a family that's their kids aren't baptized and the parents aren't part of the church, and they go to a priest who's like, "I'll have to take this all the way up to the Vatican for approval."
I will say that is the same priest, because not that I saw the first movie, but I saw like a recurring cast members list, and he was in the first movie as well.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, same guy. So yeah, he's an American priest.
Yeah, I'm only bringing up the Anglican angle because that's what I would think would be more common in the UK, but I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there are Catholic churches in the UK.
I mean, the Helsing anime taught me the Vatican has no authority in London.
Exactly. this is a side road. Don't worry about it. Anyhow.
But yeah, so, I mean, we get a scene now that I think Brad has some serious misgivings about, because like Lorraine has this vision of the nun, and she starts like scribbling letters into her Bible.
Did you see the Easter egg in that scene?
Excuse me
while I barf and not from the fucking Four Loko.
The Easter egg where you see A, L, A, K letters randomly on her shell, on her bookshelf. It's
the worst. So we get at least four instances of Valak hidden in the scenery.
I only caught two.
The only problem is they're not very hidden.
No, it just is confusing when you see it and you're like, what? And then when the movie has its reveal, you're like, God damn it, that's stupid.
Yeah, it's incredibly lame. The first one that you notice, there's the first scene where you see it, is Ed and Lorraine in the kitchen, and there's a little heart that has a big V in it that says love, and then down below in the wood of the baseboard it says Alec, so it's Valak. The dumbest one in my opinion is behind Lorraine. There's like a children's craft and it's lined up against the wall and it literally just says Valak.
There's a
V-A-L-A-K.
Oh my god, I missed that one.
So, it's the worst.
I looked up Valak and because it's an actual it's actual piece of folklore, a demon and multiple piece of text, but it's always presented as like a little like cherubic looking angel type demon riding a dragon.
See, so, that would have been cool. That would have been way cool.
That's just a fucking evil nun.
Anyways, the bookshelf one, which everybody noticed, which is super dumb.
Which my misgiving about that is, like, so you get all of those five wooden letters. The family's name is Ed, Lorraine, and Judy.
Yeah.
They would have no reason to purchase a V or a K.
See, you know how you should have done that scene, James Wan, who I assume is listening to this, is that you start out with the letters being like A, B, C, D, E, because they're like, their library is organized, and they have the big block letters to indicate, that part of the alphabet. And then, after a few things, then they just inexplicably the next scene they're V-A-L-A-K instead. That's how you do that fucking scene, James Wan. I mean,
or just add us if you need
to fucking make your next movie better.
Yeah, or if you're gonna make the Easter egg so obvious, like the letters on the bookshelf, only put it in one cut.
Yeah, yeah.
Have it show up, take it away for any other cuts in that set.
Yeah.
That would be spooky. That would be cool. The last one is an actual Easter egg. Judy's making charm bracelets on the table, and I had seen the three obvious ones, and I was like, "Oh, I wonder if there's a Valak there." And there's a Valak there.
Oh, I didn't catch that either.
Which would have been good. Which would have been, a nice Easter egg for somebody who's a fan of this movie and watches it multiple times, and then they can point it out on the IMDb page. But no, we have these three massive. Dumb ones.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to post them to you, Dr. Nick, so you can take a look at.
Yeah, I loved it when Brad was watching this and he was like live tweeting like comments to us in our back channel. And he was just posting those screen caps and going, come on, come on, come on.
What might be the most offensive part of that to me is just that. I'm sorry to be the actually guy, but I have to. When you do based on a true story, I'm going to be the fucking actually guy. Judy Warren was in her 30s in the late 70s.
Oh my god, I didn't know that.
Well, but that's not dramatic.
Yeah,
if we have to do that.
Yeah, and also you need her to be a young kid so she can be a dum-dum and go into her parents' like super special haunted room where they keep all the haunted artifacts, and it's blessed by a priest.
Including the skull from Vice Versa for some fucking reason.
Yeah, like in the first movie, part of like one of the spooky things that happened is that like the demon that's haunting the house that they're trying to investigate is also haunting them back home, and they have to go home and Judy's messing around in the family containment vault room where they
Lee Matherton makes them turn it off.
They have a priest come in and bless the room every month, but in reality they turn it into a museum where they charge people money for admittance.
Oh my god.
I did not realize Judy was in her 30s.
Maybe if I drink enough Four Loko, I'll forget this movie. But yeah, Judy was born sometime in or around World War II.
Oh my god.
So moving on, the Warrens arrive in England, and we start hearing Christmas songs because this movie takes place around the holidays. It's a legitimate, actual Christmas movie, folks.
Yes, there's Christmas music. There's like at least one creepy Christmas music cue. There's some Christmas trees.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like whenever the nun Valak shows up, we hear this really creepy version of "Hark the Herald Angels Sing," mm-hmm. which I think is actually a pretty fun little touch.
Yeah, I like that.
I like that they turned a Christmas song like evil and made that disturbing. That was a good one.
What are other good creepy evil Christmas songs? Do you think
Jingle Bells?
Jingle Bells is a song about a car crash. So yeah,
you're thinking of Last Kiss.
No, Jingle Bells is a song about how they crashed their one horse open sleigh into a snowbank.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I thought you were doing the Batmobile lost a wheel.
No, I'm dead fucking serious. Okay. That's like the second and third verse of that song.
Oh, no one knows those.
The Batmobile lost its wheel and they called AAA.
Hey.
Hey. But no, like we hear like a children's choir singing the first Noel. We get the Silent Night. And, of course, everyone's favorite Christmas song, the Bee Gees' I Started a Joke.
There's a part when Santa shows up and fights the ghost. That was kind of weird.
Yeah, but, you know, I'll roll with it in a series like this. But from here, it's pretty much just the Warrens fight the ghosts and creepy things happen.
Okay, I got to interject. Someone please make me a movie where Santa fights Krampus.
I'm kind of surprised that hasn't been done already.
That has to have been done.
Yeah, it has to have been.
Make me a good movie where Santa fights Krampus.
Now you're talking business.
Santa versus Krampus, a book by Jim Hodgson. Well, that's appropriate. Published May 27th, 2017. What are you doing publishing a Santa book in the middle of summer, my dude?
Got to get the word out.
I guess.
What are we doing recording a fucking Christmas podcast in October?
Beats me.
We got us. You got us. Yeah. So we got to. I think we have
Take
to.
That us.
I think we have to talk about some of the scares because I think some of them are good. But then, like one of the things is like you got that little creepy like rotating like thing with the slots where there's just like a guy who's just walking doing a funny walk and it's called the Crooked Man. I want to talk.
Comes out and it's the Joker.
Yeah. Yeah.
Except kinetoscope.
Kinetoscope. I think sounds right. But yeah, he's basically. He's Tim Burton's Mad Hatter and the Joker, and he's stop motion.
And he's also very bad and doesn't fit in this movie, and I dislike it a lot.
Hey, guess what, Bradford? They're making a movie just for the Crooked Man.
Oh, yeah, it's called Joker, and Joaquin Phoenix was in it.
Are they really?
No, they really are.
I thought the Crooked Man was supposed to be like an avatar of Bill Wilkins. Like, they didn't explain this very well at all.
No, I mean, he's just supposed to be spooky, and so they can make an entire other spooky movie about him. Because, hey, guess what? There's also a prequel movie for The Nun, and they're making a sequel to The Nun.
Of course there is. Of course they did.
The device called a Zoetrope, by the way.
Oh, okay. Zoetrope.
Zoetrope, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. But there's also... But yeah,
that's so bad. I hate it. It's like a bad, cheesy Slender Man.
That's exactly what it is.
I kind of like the scene where the dog just suddenly turned into him. I like that little transition bit.
That was okay.
The scene where like the Joker grabs the kid with the umbrella though and hooks it, like it was like sub Beetlejuice level of like stop motion.
Yeah,
it was so jarring that it was just suddenly like bad animation right then.
It was stop motion done with horror movie budget CGI.
My thing with the Crooked Man is like I knew enough about this movie through cultural osmosis that like I knew there was a nun in it. I knew there were ghosts. Had not a clue. Had not heard a single thing about the Crooked Man. So when he actually showed up in the flesh, I fucking loved it.
Yeah,
because it's absolutely insane.
You can ask Karen about this. When I showed up, I just started screaming, "That's the fucking Joker! That's the Joker!"
I mean, I'm busting on this movie, but I did overall enjoy it quite a bit just because I like James Wan's style of like haunted house thrill ride horror movies.
Oh yeah, no, if this movie wasn't about the Warrens, I would have loved it so much more.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's the thing, like the push and pull about these movies is like on the one hand, like yeah, it's glamorizing the Warrens when it really shouldn't, but also like they're just really fucking good like haunted house movies, you guys.
Yeah.
And like James Wan really knows how to put a set piece together and how to stage a scare.
I mean,
and like the jump scares in this are predictable and obvious, but man, they still work.
I mean, yeah, it's not surprising when the nun painting turns into the nun, but that doesn't stop it from being fucking spooky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Pretty okay.
Yeah,
I did like the when she's like looking at it in the dark and it's the nun, but then it's not the nun and there's no further action on it. I think that's creepier than like jump scares, you know?
There was
my favorite little bits in this were anytime someone looks into like a dark corner and the corner has been like intentionally made darker and like something's coming out of that corner. I just know it. And then it just doesn't.
Yeah, then they
just
don't
lingers
give
on it.
That was one of my favorites was like in like one of the earliest haunting scenes when they're in the girl's bedroom and like Janet starts talking as Billy and like you could just see like it cuts over to the other sister and you see that there's like a face in the corner and she turns on the light and it's just one of the posters hanging on her wall.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you notice who the posters were?
I noticed that they in the credits they were like accurate to like what they had at the time, but I didn't recognize any of the celebs.
Person I recognized was Princess Di.
It was Starsky and Hutch. It was the actors from Starsky and Hutch, which I guess was also period appropriate.
I didn't know Ben Stiller and Owen Wilson were that old.
Oh yeah, they're ancient, didn't you know? Like they drink the serum.
Speaking of ancient, I have a question for you all. This is a ghost question for you ghost experts.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of stuff thrown around, people being teleported around. Should a ghost have more power than the original body's corporeal form? Because Bill Wilkins was an invalid who died in a chair on an oxygen tank. Do you think a ghost should be able to do this sort of thing?
Or should he
be an old and firm ghost?
He's a poltergeist. He does mischievous stuff.
I suppose that's true.
We should play Phasmophobia after this.
Well, even then, like, the ghost can inhabit Janet's body, and we see, like, on video her, like, throwing things around and smashing things up, so...
Oh, yeah, that's...
She's
yeah.
definitely doing that.
So, you guys know how I have, like, brain problems?
Yes.
Yeah.
Alright, so, I have to say, I couldn't help... I was completely sidetracked with this movie by just imagining Valak going, "You and me, Lorraine! We're meant to be!" And then also just like Janet and Warren, Janet, Lorraine, Rocky. That's no fault of the movie because they're real people, but like I couldn't stop. It just like it made it worse or better. So, I don't know which.
So then at the end, like Patrick Wilson grabs Janet out the window and he points at the nun and says, "Hey, you, get your damn hands off." Yep.
I would give this movie a medium 5/5 if they had actually done that.
A lot of spooky times, but then we have a crisis of faith, as all movies do, because a video camera catches Janet throwing stuff and bending spoons, and the skeptic, which I hate how this movie paints
skeptics
as assholes.
Yeah.
It's the worst.
That's another major part of why this movie has issues.
That rubs me the wrong way more than anything else in this movie.
Yeah.
Also, I want to point out, these skeptics are also just other different quacks.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, but still,
like
in the movie, they're painted as academics, even though they may be originally based on quacks or, the head of the Metaphysical Society of London or whatever.
Yeah, the Psychical Society.
Psychical Society.
Yeah, oh
right.
My God, yeah.
Like, yeah, like, that's what's the most, like, padly offensive thing about this is just, like, yeah, all these people, they're not like, oh, this is fake. Some of them are. But they're more just, like, the part that's fake is just, like, oh, the Warrens really don't know what the fuck they're talking about, you know?
No, my...
Like, that Stephen Caple guy, he's like, this isn't demons. Yeah, this isn't demons. This is vampires. What the fuck are you talking about, dude?
I think my favorite thing about that was, like, oh, we have this video of this 11-year-old girl hurling a table at a door so hard it breaks into splinters, and they're like, yeah, that's what normal 11-year-olds can do. That she's just busting on us. And then no one's just like, yeah, she has spooky demonic possession powers in this reality where spooky demonic possession is real.
Which that's one of the parts that comes from the actual case where they did have video of this girl like doing this shit on her own, you know. But also the problem with that is like, you've been telling me this girl's demonically possessed, you're gonna go with a video of her doing shit is not her being possessed by this demon.
Yeah.
Like the demon's possessing her, making her do shit, and you found a video of her doing shit. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, to get into the real Enfield haunting really quick.
Yeah,
I mean,
obviously
it did not happen. Because A, ghosts don't exist. B, the thing that's most convincing about the evidence against the Enfield haunting is the vocabulary analysis that they did and the speech pattern analysis that they did whenever she was quote-unquote possessed.
Yeah.
It was basically identical to her vocabulary level and speech patterns.
One
thing I read was, like, the ghost, the demon, or whatever you want to call it, also talked about shit like periods a bunch, which is like, yeah, it's gotta be what an 11-year-old girl thinks is, like, creepy and weird. There you go.
Oh my god.
Okay. I didn't know that part. That's actually kind of funny.
The ghost is just like, humans, can you believe this?
All right, when did The Shining come out?
Oh,
80. What was that? Early 80s?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. All then maybe in the 70s they were fooled by the Danny's not here now, Mrs. Torrance voice, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think my girlfriend read that like the BBC interview that like is presented in the movie where the BBC video comes to like film them, like Janet like has her hand in front of her mouth as she's making the bill as the bill voice is happening.
Cool. Great job.
I remember like reading about like they had like a stage position of ventriloquist, both just like, yeah, no, this is totally something you could do, and an inventive and clever 11-year-old could have pulled this shit off.
Right, because there's the scene where they like videotape or record Janet speaking in the demon ghost voice.
Yeah,
but like the demon will only speak if nobody is looking, so everybody turns their heads away, and she puts a glass of water in her mouth, and then we just hear the demon voice.
Yeah. I liked that scene because I was, like, impressed by how long they held that shot for. I was like,
yeah, really?
Yeah. Again, James Wan, like, he reminds me of, like, early Brian De Palma, where you just do not know what the hell kind of shot he's going to use next, and he definitely loves... Like, he definitely loves that the restaurant shot from Goodfellas, because all of his movies, like, have that shot in it. But also he'll just, like, oh, the camera's upside down now. Oh, the camera's just, like, tracking someone from above, like the end of Taxi Driver. He's just throwing everything at the wall.
Speaking of, this is absolutely a derail, but speaking of the Copacabana scene, or what it's called, in Goodfellas, one of the most baffling fucking things I've seen is one of the later episodes of Pen 15... just imitates that Goodfellas shot for no fucking reason.
it's just
the two like middle-aged women playing teen girls running around a restaurant, just a full nonstop tracking shot.
Oh my god!
I know what episode you're talking about, and all I can say is like, man, I just respect.
I know it is. Why did you do that? But goddamn, good job.
Yeah, like, they did it because they could.
Yeah, sometimes you just got it. You get something in your brain, you got to do it. You know?
Yeah. Another thing with James Wan movies is like the house in a James Wan movie is always like unrealistically huge.
Yeah, and, yeah.
And this is supposed to be a tenement
council
house,
house. Yeah, this is supposed to be a council housing in sort of a, you know, a rundown part of London. It's a pretty big house, can hold four kids.
If I've learned one thing in the Conjuring movies, do not live in a dirty house with a ton of kids, because that's how they got into trouble in the first Conjuring. They move into a dirty house they bought at auction from the bank with five kids. What do you know? Next thing, they got possessed.
I have five cats, but I think the cats would just eat the ghost face if it showed up.
Nick, was it you that pointed out on Twitter a while back that like, somebody pointed out that like in the first Conjuring, like the family discovers the basement and the furnaces in the basement. So as far as the family knew, the house did not have any central heating.
I did not notice that.
people still got inspections on houses when they bought houses, even way back when, right? This is not a new thing.
No, yeah. All I can guess is that it was just an incredibly old house and they just like needed a house. I don't know. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't matter.
Yeah,
but it's movie logic. Right.
It's movie logic, but like
any
house in a James Wan movie, be it Conjuring 1 or 2, be it Malignant, the house
Insidious.
Is just like, say what?
Caked in filth.
Insidious.
Oh god, yes, Insidious. Like, those houses are just unreasonably large, and the only reason is because, like, oh, that's obviously going to be, like, a huge set piece in this room at some point.
Also, James Wan needs that much room to swing his cameras around.
Yeah, exactly. Not to mention, like, the basement in this movie is a fucking nightmare on its own.
I think every James Wan movie is connected by the basements and the houses, just because, like, the basement of the Amityville house looks so much like the basement of the house in The Conjuring.
It's the basement of the fucking neighbor's house in Home Alone.
In this one, literally, yeah, because it's...
That's why there's a creepy furnace, because it's the McAllister's house, and then they go next door, and it's flooded, and then the Joker shows up with a snow shovel or something.
Yeah, basically.
Oh, can I do a quick video game chat derail?
Oh, of course.
Yes,
oh,
please.
Has anybody here played Disco Elysium?
I'm playing it right now. I'm obsessed with it.
Is it just me, or does Bill sound like the ancient reptilian brain?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Nothing but darkness.
I have not played since the Final Cut came out, so... plus better voices, but minus, like, people I online know, I guess. I am kind of, from what I've heard, I am kind of sad that they toned down Kuno's voice, because Kuno's voice being so over the top and shitty so much fun.
It's still very over the top, I must say, as somebody who has just experienced Kuno for the first time. I can't imagine how bad it is in the first one, if you're
I think there's a toggle where you can switch the original voices.
In the first one,
Kuno sounds like me doing, like, a British accent, but also yelling as loud as I can the entire time.
Give me a little bit of your Kuno, please.
But also, if his voice was an octave higher.
Yeah, of course. It's Kuno. Give me your best Kuno, John.
All right, what's a Kuno line?
Kuno doesn't care.
Kuno doesn't care!
That's good. Kuno doesn't care!
I'll blow your brains out, pig!
Kuno is such a great fucking character.
I feel bad for Joe, because I have a feeling Joe hasn't played Disco.
Have you played Disco Elysium, Joe?
I have not. I'm sorry.
You absolutely should. It's a trip.
It's really fun.
Man, 4 Loko's pretty fucking good.
Yeah, I think the candy has possessed you guys, and we've just kind of gone off the rails.
Since we're in video game chat, here's a problem. I made my Final Fantasy XIV character dress like the Joker, and the scene where the fucking Crooked Man has the umbrella over his shoulder, that's the exact fucking stance Gunbreakers take in Final Fantasy XIV when they hold their fucking weapon. So, like, it's just like, oh, that's my Final Fantasy XIV character. Yeah, I know that guy.
We had a good run. We made it this far without Final Fantasy XIV chat.
Yeah. This is all getting cut, anyway.
Let me just cross the Final Fantasy XIV off on my Christmas Creek bingo card. So, hey, should we wrap this movie up? What's left?
Yeah.
I think last where we were was the Warrens see a video of Janet throwing crap around the kitchen, and that proves that even though she somehow twisted herself contortionist like into an electrical closet in an impossible way, she's not possessed. So they are leaving England because they're like, we can't do anything. The church doesn't want to be involved with this, and we're only here on behalf of the church. While, as Joe alluded to earlier, the Bee Gees song plays.
Yes. Yeah. This is where I started a joke plays, and it's a pretty good needle drop,
it's,
if I'm being honest.
It's really on the nose, but, like, James Wan does not understand subtlety, and God bless him for that.
Yeah.
All I can say for it is he really was the perfect man to make Aquaman, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Oh, boy. But then the Warrens return to the house.
Well, the Warrens, on the train, they, like, listen to the... their videographer, audio guy,
I
was just like...
I love this fucking scene.
He was just like, oh, you gotta listen to these tapes, and then that just gets ignored until they fall onto the floor of the train and make an X.
X, like, yes, because X marks the spot.
I hated that fucking X, but, like, the scene of them, like, realizing to put the tapes together was so fucking good.
Yeah,
that was legitimate. Like, it's like, man, this scene deserves a better movie around the rest of it.
Because, like, they realized, like, the ghost speaking through Janet was saying, like, half of a message at one point and then the other half of a message at the other point, and you sync the two together, and it spells out a warning.
And it's just like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, both cases are the same case.
Yes. Whoa. Help, please, it won't let me go. And then you discover the demon Valak is actually possessing and controlling Bill Wilkins.
And well,
Bill Wilkins is a sympathetic ghost trying to actually get them out of the house to save their lives.
From Valak, the spooky nun.
So let me stop this here. So let me explain this. So what's going on is Valak, the demon, is possessing this random fucking family in England as a test of Lorraine Warren's faith.
Yes.
I'm going to drink more Four Loko.
Yeah, this is some Christmas Shoes stuff going on right now.
Wait, what if Christmas Shoes were actually a horror movie, like a legit real horror movie?
Oh, my God.
The Conjuring 2.
Yeah.
It was almost Christmas time, and then I stood in yet another line.
That girl took a leap of faith when she tried to buy shoes without any money.
So they realize that Valak is behind all of, or they don't realize it's Valak yet, but they realize that there's another big bad behind all of this.
And
they rush back.
It's the nun. The nun is the one behind it all.
Yes, the nun. Yes. They don't know the nun's name yet.
And they need the nun's name to have power over it.
Yeah.
Sure.
The nun is a sovereign citizen.
Diplomatic immunity.
I'm traveling. Are you going to impede my traveling?
The nun's name is Sister Mary Clarence.
Well, the nun's name is Valak, but it has to be spelled in all caps in red ink.
Of course. And so Ed breaks into the house, which has been flooding in the basement, so he's having a hell of a time. Lorraine goes through the other way, I guess, to save him because she realizes he's in danger.
Well, no, Lorraine has her moment where she realizes she wrote down the demon's name, and when she cries out, Valak, then the lightning strikes the tree out the front of the house, and it makes the sharp point that she saw in her dream that stabbed Ed and killed him.
Yes, and so obviously the thing that's going to happen now is Ed and Janet are going to dangle from the second story window above this giant spike.
And all I could think about the scene was like, man, last time I saw the scene, Air was playing.
But like, at no point did it occur to Ed just to, you know, swing the kid to the right to dodge the fucking spike that's not going to move.
Yeah.
I mean, it's what?
What if the tree did move, though?
Well, then it's we're in Poltergeist territory.
The Joker and then Poison Ivy's here, too.
It's like a 15-foot drop from the bottom of his hand. He could probably aim her towards a soft patch or a bush and drop her.
Aim her towards the neighbor that looks like Otho from Beetlejuice.
Yeah, just bounce her. But they save the day and everything's great. Happy, happy, Merry Christmas.
And they condemn Valak back to hell.
Oh, okay, yes.
Yeah, it's like in Dungeons and Dragons when you beat a demon, they just go back to the Ninth House.
That's all the notes I got for Conjuring 2. It just kind of ends after that.
Yeah, they have a nice little meet cute with Janet where Ed gives Janet his rosary, his cross, and he's just like, "Oh, if you meet someone as an adult who needs help, give them this cross, pass it on."
What Kara said was like, "She's like, oh, thanks. This will be very useful in like about 5 years when I discover the cure."
And as of yet, they have not made that sequel, but I'm sure it's coming.
They did make the third Conjuring movie came out this year. The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It.
Yeah, but is it about her?
Oh no! Ooh, yeah, you're right. They're definitely setting that up for another entry in the Conjuring verse.
She's coming back. I feel it.
Yeah,
I feel it in my bones. That's Conjuring 2, everybody. It's a fun, spooky time. But hey, it's time to take this thing to the crankometer. Which is our patented XY-axis for rating Christmas movies. The X-axis is how Christmassy a film is, from, you know, -5 to +5. And the Y-axis is how good the film is. So, gentle friends, X-axis, Christmas scale. How Christmassy is The Conjuring 2?
I wish it used Christmas more. I wish there was, like, shit where, like, the fucking demon was possessing, like, the Christmas tree and shit like that. Like, it's just a Christmas tree, and there's just, like, some Christmas decorations in the window, and that's it. And it's such a fucking waste. Come on, James Wan.
Agreed.
James Wan, literally, at Christmas Creeps, like, just fucking DM us. I'll help you make your movie better.
Like, my race are competitive. Yeah, they throw the Christmas tree, like, up against a wall or something during the poltergeist activity. Doesn't even touch it.
He's going to get impaled on the Christmas tree. Come the fuck on, James Wan!
At no point does a demon possess a kid with a candy cane and the kid tries to stab somebody with the candy cane. I mean, come on.
Ooh, right, licked to a sharp point. Oh, that'd be so good.
That would
but I enjoy what's here. Like I think the Christmas elements that are here are perfectly fine, and they kind of lend it a little spooky, atmosphere.
Yeah, Hark the Herald Angels scene. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
That's good.
Yeah,
that was good.
I'm gonna give it at least 2 points for that alone.
I was thinking about it too, because it has some Christmas flair. It's not overpowering, and it's not really like here's Christmas, but fucked up. So it uses just enough Christmas to have some flair, and there's like, and I guess like the Christmassy stuff ties in with how Jesus-y the movie is.
I guess, because they really don't get into much of that, do they?
No.
Like, I'm surprised there wasn't a scene where they like went to church, for, like, a midnight mass or something.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, part of the movie setup is you have to take as a given that like Catholicism is real, basically.
That's fair.
Yeah, you have to take a leap of faith.
What? Get out of here.
Leap of Faith is the name of a recurring event in the Gold Saucer in Final Fantasy XIV.
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
Get out.
Oh my god.
I'm gonna do fucking Leap of Faith after this.
I'm gonna if nobody's gonna throw a number out, I'm gonna stick it at a number two.
Yeah, I agree with two.
I'll agree with two, yeah. It doesn't. The elements add to they're set dressing, but they're good set dressing. They don't really add anything more beyond that. They don't really fuck with anything either.
But also at the same time, you could really take them out and you would lose nothing.
Yeah.
No, but I'm not mad at them for being here.
Yeah, so up two is fine. So then quality quotient. How much did we enjoy The Conjuring 2, friends?
This is a tough one because, again, the movie itself is great. I enjoyed the movie itself, but it is whitewashing the reputation of a couple bad people.
Yeah.
I'm going to give I want to say negative two. Negative one for Ed, negative one for Lorraine.
I agree. I have it in my show notes. My last note is I really would have enjoyed this movie a lot more if it had made up the characters whole cloth.
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely.
Or even if it was just based on the Enfield haunting, but not involving the Warrens.
And
that's frustrating too, because like the actors Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga, they're great in this movie.
Oh yeah, they're good.
They're really good,
and it's just like in service of who it has to be based on. That's just the tragedy of it. Like I'm stuck on this one because I don't want to give it negative points, but you kind of have to, don't you?
Yeah, like, that's, I mean, I would want to give it, like, a 2 or 3 just because of the movie, but, yeah, we got to contend with, the Warrens.
Maybe a negative one?
I mean, how to put it, like, if, let me think of a really stupid analogy.
Well,
If Martin Scorsese made God's Not Dead, the problem is still it's fucking God's Not Dead.
Yes.
Well put. Well put. Negative two is fine now that you put it that way.
That's fair. Like, I was just going to say, we gave Maniac Cop a plus one, plus two. And
this is good.
We just did nothing but slam Robert Davi for an hour. So.
Well, Robert Zadar is so much better.
I guess.
I mean, I'm updating my Roberts.xls.
I think what really they needed to do with this movie is cast someone who's willing to do driver's seat cell phone rants like Robert Davi, and then we could give it positive points.
Yes. Oh man. So yeah, I guess that's you guys make
a negative
points.
One.
All these caveats are starting to stack up, and like
I'd say negative one or zero, just perfectly
like,
balanced.
It's subjectively a better film than Maniac Cop, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
It's just the way that it approaches some of its subject matter is unsavory at best.
Yeah.
Yeah, this Four Loko is doing a number on me, but I'm trying to say through the haze that the biggest problem is that I was just so mad at this movie for treating the Warrens with any sort of like respect or dignity. Motherfuck to the Warrens. It really colored the entire experience. The horror itself, like a lot of the stuff was just kind of like, come the fuck on, dude. But a lot of it was good. The problem is the entire time I'm just like, Ed Warren, Lorraine Warren, I hate both of you.
You know what? Yeah. Slender Man was really dumb too, and I didn't like that. So that I'm gonna say negative two. That was really cheesy and dumb, and it didn't even make any sense with the film. Did Bill summon it? Did Valak summon it? Like, we don't get any context. Yeah, it's just a creepy, creepy Slender Man because it's 2016.
You gotta wait for the prequel movie. Like the Joker. What's that, Nick? I was saying you gotta wait for the prequel movie to find out.
I don't know.
Okay, this is worse than the Marvel Universe. Okay.
Hey, I got fucking legit mad when I like looked on Wikipedia and saw like it was part of the Conjuring Universe. No!
I was gonna say at least these movies are shorter, but The Conjuring was over 2 hours long and probably didn't need to be.
Yeah, like this could have been a solid like 90 minutes, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
My feeling on like horror movies nowadays like is if your horror movie is longer than The Night Stalker, which is 70 minutes, you really have to ask yourself why.
Yeah, and, I mean, it's the rule. It's the rule I've made. Like, if your movie is a comedy or horror movie, 90 minutes. Your movie is like a serious, like, I'm trying for an Oscar drama, 120. Anything more than that, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, don't waste my time. So yeah, I guess we're gonna land on a positive two, negative two for The Conjuring Two.
Yeah,
yes.
All the twos even out.
Yes,
I'll give this Four Loko a four.
That's fair.
You give it a sour. Sour four great 14%.
Yeah, man.
Loco.
It turns out, everybody, I'm not used to 40% ABV.
Who is? Well, gentle friends, that's been Home for the Holidays. I've certainly enjoyed myself tonight and this entire month. I hope you have as well. Dr. Nick, thank you so much for joining us once again.
You're welcome. Anytime. But oh yeah. I'd like to call my Sean. For next time,
okay.
I think I'm the one who gave you the arcane knowledge that Paul Blart Mall Cop is a Christmas movie. So if you ever do Paul Blart Mall Cop, I will throw myself on the altar of sacrifice.
What are you doing 2 weeks from now?
I remember you saying that. Yes,
I think absolutely. I remember your exact reaction being, "Ugh."
Of course, it was. Are you kidding me?
All I know about Paul Blart Mall Cop is him being very bad at Rock Band.
Please do join us for that. Very special. I think I'll also call my shot, and if we actually end up doing Paul Blart Mall Cop, I'm going to wrap my lips around one of those sweet, sweet four sour four great 14% locos.
This is a God. Four Loko family here on the Christmas tree.
I'm going to hate every minute of it.
I solely recommend Four Loko. Or if you don't want the shitty flavors, I mean, quote 45 exists. It works every time.
They're all shitty flavors, John.
Okay. No, I've had Cold 45. I like Cold 45.
Guys, I'm trying to end this podcast. Nick, is there anything you want to plug while you're here?
You can just follow me on Twitter at O Pencil Sharp. That's O H Pencil Sharp. That's my at handle. I tweet about all sorts of dumb stuff, but I don't really have much else going on.
He tweets about stealing stuff from the library.
I don't steal stuff from the library. I rent stuff from the library.
And that distinction is academic at best.
You pay money to rent stuff from the library?
I don't pay stuff. I don't pay for the. I pay my taxes to the library.
That's. Yeah, but there you go. John, Brad, anything you guys want to plug before we get out of here?
Yeah, Final Fantasy 14%. Hold on.
Final Fantasy 14%.
Final Fantasy 4 Loko.
Yeah, Endwalker is coming out next month. Y'all should play Final Fantasy 14. There's a free trial up to level 60, etc., etc. You've seen everybody you know tweet about it. Just fucking play the goddamn game with me, please.
I have, because everybody I know is you.
Yeah.
Brad, anything else?
How do I follow that? Like, Come on. Thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it.
Yes. If you want to send us anything on the web, you can tweet at us at Christmas Creeps. You can email us at xmascreeps@gmail.com. John, what do you got?
I drank an entire Four Loko on a Wednesday night. What the fuck is wrong with me? I got work tomorrow.
Folks, we got to get out of here before J-Man does something he regrets. So, yeah, if you want to like, comment, and subscribe, do all that fun shit, you know what to do. Find us on the web at christmascreeps.com, and we will rock on into the holiday season with wild abandon.
Mogstation.com.
Okay. So for Christmas Creeps, I've been Joseph Wade.
I'm Bradford.
I'm kind of fucked up right now. What the fuck?
I'm Dr. Nick.
Hi, Dr. Nick.
Bye, Dr. Nick.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Good night, everybody. Happy Christmas.